Karen, would you please call the roll?
I will. Amelon?
Here.
Bynum?
Here.
Severson?
Here.
Skillings? Lynn?
Here.
Benson? Larson?
Here.
Hagerman?
Here.
Prysanka? Von Bargen?
Here.
And I see that SEPA staff is on the line. And Mr. Paisner, is there anyone else on the phone or on the line on Zoom that would like to identify themselves? No response, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sharon. With that, let's move on to communications and laying the table items. Does anybody have anything that they want to present? Hearing none, let's move then to disclosures of conflict of interest. And again, does anybody want to have anything that they want to disclose? Hearing none, let's move then to approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda as it stands?
The motion, Bob and Ketchikan.
Second.
Or second.
Okay, thank you. Did you catch that, Sharon?
Yes, I did. Severson, Von Bargen.
Okay, thank you. With that, are there any changes to today's agenda that somebody wants to make? Hearing none, Sharon, would you go ahead and please call the roll then on the agenda as it is?
I will. Amelon?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Von Bargen?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Item three, persons to be heard. Do we have anybody on the telephone to be heard, Sharon?
There was no response, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. We'll move then to item four, review and approval of the minutes. And I think what we'll do is we'll take the minutes of the June 30th, 2020 regular meeting, the August 17th, 2020 minutes of the special board meeting, and the September 4th, 2020 minutes of the special board meeting. And if I have a motion to approve those minutes.
Mr. Chair, this is Lisa. I move to approve the June 30, 2020 regular board meeting minutes, the August 17, 2020 special board meeting minutes, and the September 4th, 2020 special board meeting minutes.
Thank you,
Bob. I second.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Are there any, does anybody have any changes that they are proposing to those minutes? Okay, hearing none, Sharon, would you go ahead and call roll on that, please?
Yes, Von Bargen?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Moving on then to financial reports, I believe that there's a motion on page 15 accept year-to-date financial statements.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move to accept the year-to-date financial statements through August 2020 and disbursements of June, July, and August 2020, totaling $1,651,556.19 as presented.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, Trey, I'll turn that back to you and Kay then for discussion.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome, everybody. It's good to see everybody's face. Haven't seen you folks for quite a while. Thanks for tuning in today. So just hitting a couple of high points in my cover letter there. Just like to note that my opening there that SEPA's financial position is stable at the moment. but actions will be required over the next year to service new submarine cable replacement debt and cover increases in operational expenses experienced over the past 23 years. SEPA has not had a rate increase during this lengthy period, but its role has increased substantially and overhead costs have consistently trended upward. I think it's important to mention that stuff on record here. Just high level, revenue and expenses are tracking budget pretty well. And as we go through the financials here, I'll point out a couple of areas there of interest. I'll say that our R&R projects are expenditures for the total annual year budget appear to be low. But I will say that that does not include all the maintenance activities that occurred for this fall outage. And then we're anticipating we'll probably have some significant milestone payments associated with the station service equipment purchases to the tune of about $1 million. So, and so with that, if it's okay, I'll just direct you through the financials. I'll start with page 16. Does anybody have any questions yet? I'll just pause. Okay. So on page 16, I just wanted to highlight, if you look at the last 4 months on this graph, in that column, you can see those are pretty tight and small. And as I mentioned in my cover, oftentimes when we have a lot of hydro resources, excessive hydro resources, namely Ketchikan for the most part, is able to pull on their legacy projects ahead of SEPA's in the resource stack. And so that actually, it's counterintuitive, but in times of excess hydro, SEPA's revenues tend to actually trend down a little bit. And you can see we started off really robust at the first of the year. And then this last 4 months has been kind of a steady taper. And I expect that to probably continue for the rest of the year a bit. But where we're at right now, year to date, we're good due to the robust earlier months. Any questions? All right. I'll draw your attention to
Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead, Lisa.
I apologize. Trey, do you think we might see, even though Ketchikan's going to be pulling on their legacy project, do you think because of COVID and people staying home a little bit more that we may see an upward trend in usage or no?
So I'm not, we don't track the retail sales as much, and I'm sure there's a lot of folks on the line here that can talk specifically right. about right. what they're seeing on their utilities. But I'll say for the most part, I don't think we're seeing a large swing in either direction. I would say the most impactful elements to sales overall is weather. Once the weather trends a little colder, people will be using their space heaters and things of that nature more. Also, I'll note that, fish processing was off a yeah. bit this summer, and we usually get a kick there, too. So I think those are probably the two major components.
Okay.
And happy to pause here if any of the other utility managers would like to comment on their sales.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of an uptick as COVID started, but not anything huge.
Of course, the schools are back in session for the most part too. So somewhat semblance back to normal as far as usage goes there, I anticipate. And of course the tourism element is never showed up, but it would typically be tapering off about this time as well. Okay, moving on. Next page on page 20. This is just our fun graph. Gives you a quick snapshot. It's in every board packet. And here it's real easy to see you know, where we would be drawing our funds off potentially for the initial funding for the submarine cable. As we mentioned before, we'd be drawing off the self-insured risk fund first and rate stabilization fund and R&R and revenue as needed. So just a quick snapshot. Moving on to page 21. Just a quick snapshot on our outstanding grant. We have, just as a reminder, we have one outstanding grant, and we're primarily using this for the hydrosite investigation efforts. And we have a little bit of money left in there, probably about $300,000. This is only good through the end of June. And I'll talk about that a little bit later in the board packet. And then just our typical financials, you can go to page 22, just a quick overview and a table there. It's easy to read. You can see, and this is the financials are through January through August. And you can see on the total revenue and that first operating revenue, we're pretty much right on budget right now. And operating expense is trending a bit below budget. And that's to be expected. You know, we weren't essentially stopped all travel once the COVID thing started and just expenditures have been lower in general. We've been trying to hold down costs and we've been busy on other projects. So, not much to add there. And then our typical, details and stuff on the financials. Is there, any particular questions on any part of the more detailed sheets in the budget that anybody would like to discuss? All right, not hearing any. I'm just going to keep moving if it's okay, Mr. Chair.
It is. Thank you.
Okay, and so I guess I would draw your attention to page 34 next, if you will, Robert. And this is just a summary sheet on where we're at on the R&R expenditures. And as previously mentioned, we expect that to reflect the most recent expenditures. This is only good through August, and we had a significant amount of work occur in September, and then we also anticipate some milestone payments coming up. So, we wrapped up the housing installation, which was a big ticket item as well, and had a lot of work going on in general, which I'm sure you all saw in the manager's reports as they summarized all their projects. And so that would take us into disbursements and pages there. And does anybody have any questions on any of the disbursements? And not hearing any, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, thank you. No questions. Since there's no questions on it, since we have a motion on here, on the table to approve, to accept the year-to-date financial statement. Sharon, would you please call the roll on it?
I will. Lynn?
Yes.
Von Bargen?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on into old business now, the first item on the agenda was the community COVID-19 updates. It's, I believe, page 38. I think there's a motion for a discussion.
Just a discussion item, sir.
Discussion item. So let's, if you we might, let's open that up. Trey? Why don't you start with an update, and then we can discuss where we might want to go from that, if you will, please.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we had this was a request to include this on here as a general discussion item, just to kind of see what all the other communities are doing, making sure that all four of our groups are synchronized on our approach, or at least have an understanding of what's going on in the other communities. I'll say from SEPA's perspective, we're still following our COVID-19 plan that's filed with the state. They've actually requested that we update a couple of elements of that, and which we'll be doing over this next month. But for the most part, we still have our sites generally avoiding any outside folks, such as the public, traveling on them, because we want to minimize risk to our operators, since that's a pretty sensitive key area. As far as during the extensive work we did during this last month for the outages, we had a number of contractors, coming in from out of state and from in state. And of course, we require a negative test within 3 days prior to coming to the site. And under the rules of the state, if it's critical infrastructure, they don't have to have that second test. So, so far, knock on wood, we've been, I'll say, lucky, if you will. But I also like to think that it's because we've been approaching this in a prudent fashion. We haven't had any incidences yet. It's not saying one can't sneak in at any time. And then, if it was in the office, we would probably end up shifting back to working remotely for a period of time till they could sterilize the building, and any of those folks that may be infected would do whatever the prudent action is at that time. So right now I think we're getting through it. I will say I'll compliment our staff that everybody's been willing to come to work and go out to the sites and travel as needed to get the job done. And I respect that. So we've been back working in our office here since the borough opened the building back up after the initial infection several months ago. So I'll say somewhat business as usual, but certainly no travel, spending an awful lot of time on Zoom meetings and some of the challenges that go with that. I'll talk about that when we talk outreach and advocacy type stuff a little bit later in the meeting. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to any of the other communities to
talk about what they're doing. So that's a good idea. Jeremy, would you like to talk a little bit about the situation here in Ketchikan?
Specifically with, I'll defer to Carl with regard to any of the items happening within the city, and city government, and activities like that. Currently, right now, we're just following, here in the utility, we're following protocols for what the city has outlined for us. And so right now, things are looking pretty good. All of our people are working. Right now, when we have people leaving out of state on travel with regard to out-of-state travel, we're identifying most of those employees as critical infrastructure. So we're following the critical infrastructure protocols. So that would be they return, we get a positive or a negative test. As soon as they return, we're not allowing any of the prior 72-hour travel here at the utility. So everything has to be done once you return and get a negative test. Then you can come back to work, but social distance while you're doing that, mask wearing, not in strict social distancing. So far, I think we've had 6 employees process under that protocol, and we've had all negatives, no issues there. So everything seems to be working pretty well. As far as to Carl, did you want to speak to the community as a whole and other city activities?
That's pretty much what you outlined, Jeremy. The biggest challenge we're facing right now is with non-critical infrastructure employees who want to take annual leave and go out of state, and then they have to come back and basically get their first test, and then they have to isolate pending the results of a second test within the next 7 to 14 days.
I think also in addition, I didn't mention as well, as we have had contractors come in and do work for us, and they're following the same type of protocol, we haven't had any issues there either. So things are looking pretty good for us.
Thank you. Lisa, I'll come to you if you would, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we're doing is not unlike what's being done in Ketchikan. We have a mask mandate in place at the borough, not within the city and borough of Wrangell, but just for all of our borough staff. And we are social distancing to the maximum degree possible, very rarely having in-person meetings unless we can socially distance or physically distance, I like to say now. We have a travel policy in place that if you go someplace out of state, or if you go to a place in the state that is considered a red zone by the state, you are required to be tested when you return, and you may not return to work until you have a negative test, or unless you have the ability to completely physically distance. If you've got your own office that you can go into the door and, you know, go in and shut the door and not be around anybody, then we're allowing stuff while your test results come back. But other than that, people are required to test first and then have to socially or physically distance, just like everybody else is talking about. Our biggest issue most recently has been working through the reopening of school and just addressing that here in the community. So that's been our primary focus. And we have had one employee throughout all of this test positive for COVID. Thankfully, that person had been placed on a leave by me prior to testing positive, because that individual had participated in a group event here in the community at which there was an outbreak. And so everybody that was an employee who was at that event, I said, please go home until the quarantine period is over. And we used our Families First Coronavirus Act provision to be able to pay those people while they were off duty. But thankfully, we didn't have anybody else test positive following that event or following that individual employee testing positive. So we have dropped our emergency operations center meetings down to just 2 days a week now instead of 5 days a week. So we're only meeting Mondays and Wednesdays to go over things. And right now we have, thankfully, no active cases in the community. So that's a good thing. But as we call it, COVID Friday, it always seems like there's a positive case on Friday. So I'll knock on wood and hope that that's not the case this Friday. But we're maintaining.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Carl Hagerman, I'll let you take it for Petersburg, if you will, please.
Sure. Thanks, Bob. So Petersburg, much the same as Ketchikan and Wrangell, we've got various protections in place, definitely following the state's mandates for new travelers coming into the community. Our EOC is reviewing any plans for contractors, not just for the utility, but for any contractor coming into Petersburg, to review their plan and see if there's any issues that might be not quite up to snuff as far as we're concerned. Of course, we don't have any authority to approve those plans. The state carries that authority, but we do provide feedback. And most of the contractors have been very responsive to anything that we brought up, so that's good. On the utility front, the borough does have a universal masking policy that's in place. Because Petersburg has been so successful in keeping our case count so low, a lot of our employees and our citizens are kind of ignoring some of the provisions that we have in place, which hopefully won't bite us. The fact remains, Petersburg has very low case counts, no active cases now for over a month, I think. And so we're hopefully going to ride that out for a good while longer. It's been an interesting attitude with the large outbreaks happening all around Petersburg, and Petersburg residents wanting to, you know, basically decide that there's no pandemic to worry about here locally. It's kind of a catch-22. But so far, so good. Our operators are working kind of a spread out schedule, 4/10s, and they're separate days of the week from our line crew, try and spread everybody out and minimize interactions as much as possible while keeping the facility fully staffed. That seems to be working out pretty well. Likely we'll go back to normal hours here coming up through the winter time. It's just hard to get to be productive and be safe when you're sending people out in the dark. and coal to do work. So we're probably going to dial that back. But so far, so good with COVID in Petersburg. And knock on wood, like Lisa did, we'll continue that way.
Okay. Thank you, Carl. Any questions from any of the board to the folks on what we're doing?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Bob, please.
Yeah, I just want to add a couple of things to the mix. Here in Ketchikan, we have a contractor that is going to be providing training for those individuals that are using the chemicals and procedures to disinfect their work sites and offices and stuff to make sure that they're up to the latest things on the how to handle it, the MSD sheets, and all that kind of stuff. And we're making that somewhat available to all the businesses and stuff in town to get them all on the same page and, you know, give the community some confidence in the fact that the process is working appropriately. Also, we have a provider in town that has purchased a testing machine, the BioFire Torch test machine, and it takes a number of different panels, and it will be able to determine COVID from flu, from SARS, or, you know, different things. So, and the test is a quick turnaround, which will make a huge difference in what's going on in Ketchikan. And I think that that's just going to help us. The travel on Alaska Airlines has dropped off considerably from what it was. You know, we're still getting hundreds of people coming through the airport where we're down to double digits, you know, individuals now. And I think that'll help, you know, in regards to any type of travelers coming in with COVID. The majority of the stuff we have in regards to positive cases in the past have been due to travelers. There's been some community spread that we've been able to track and isolate, but I think that as we move into the winter months, we're going to probably see a drop in that traveler infection. One of the concerns, and maybe things that will change in the program, is I think that as the winter comes on, it's going to drive more and more people into inside events and things. And so I don't know if that's going to have an impact or not, but it's something we'll probably be watching. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. You headed just exactly where I was thinking about going with Trey. And the next part of that is, do you anticipate any changes or what you're thinking about looking at the next 6 months or so related to both employees, meetings, et cetera?
So right now, you know, there seems to appear there's a little bit of a trend of an uptick, and folks have been forecasting that in the fall. Of course, now we've got kids back in school for the most part. So I think right now we're just kind of in a steady holding pattern until we see significant change in outbreak occurrences, frequency, or of course, you know, vaccine and other things like that, that'll come down the road. So I don't see any real significant changes in what we're doing currently. You know, perhaps the state will mandate some other types of changes or relax current protocols. But at this point, we're kind of at just steady as she goes.
Thank you. Any questions on that for Trey? Hearing none, how about the other communities? Do you anticipate any big changes in your process or your procedures you put in place?
Bob, this is Lisa. I would say no, not unless something changes significantly. If we were to have a major outbreak of some sort, we would probably change the way that we are doing business. But our community has not been at all responsive to any other mandates being put in place. beyond what the state did. We've attempted to on a couple of occasions institute some things like considering a community-wide mask mandate, and there just was no tolerance for it. And at the community level, at least for those people who were willing to speak out loud. And so my guess is unless we see a significant uptick in or a massive outbreak in the community, we will continue to do business as we are.
Thank you, Lisa. Carl, would you add anything you're thinking on it?
Yeah. Go ahead, Carl. Sorry.
I would just echo what Lisa said. We're pretty much in a hold pattern. The EOC is now meeting once a week. And absent an outbreak, I don't see anything changing.
Okay. Thank you, Carl. Carl Hagerman, then I'll let you.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Sorry about that, Carl. Stepping on your toes there. Yeah, in Petersburg, actually, I wanted to mention that with Ketchikan EOC's help, we're developing a community mitigation plan and a risk level system. And Ketchikan developed an extremely robust and really user-friendly, lots of information system that they put in place down there. And I've been in contact with the incident commander in Ketchikan, and have been dovetailing on on their pre-existing system to develop one for Petersburg. And that system will allow our community to make adjustments on the fly as the pandemic ebbs and flows. And I think that is it's an important aspect of this whole issue, is that right now Petersburg is in a great situation. Our risk is extremely low, but there still is risk. And so we are looking at developing this community plan so that if that changes for Petersburg and we do have outbreaks, that we can hopefully impress upon our population the need to change activities and habits so that we can bring that back into scope. But that's really the major aspect. I think our assembly, and I don't know if Bob wants to talk about this at all, but we do have a agenda item for next Monday where one of our assembly members wants to discuss repealing our local emergency declaration, which seems odd to me in the middle of this pandemic. But nonetheless, there's going to be a discussion about it at the assembly level next week. And if that happens to be repealed, then that does change the scope of things for Petersburg. And I'm not really sure what the next steps will be. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Carl. Yeah, I would just add on to that a little bit. Is it, since we've had no outbreaks and so forth here, there seems to be a very, very strong opposite reaction saying it's not real and we don't need any kind of rules. If you were even propose masking, go back to what something that Lisa said, I think we might get run out of town on a rail on that. It's not a no. It would probably be 75% of the population would say no on it. And with that, I have nothing else on it. Anything back to you, Trey, on this particular part? I guess the only other piece that came onto the table for a discussion at our last meeting had to do with an in-person meeting for December. The thoughts on that? And we didn't pursue it. It was just brought onto the table at the last meeting.
Mr. Chairman, this is Steve Prasanka. I just got on the line here. Just wanted to let Jared know.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I'm assuming that was directed at me. I would just say that it's really at the will of the board regarding whether they're comfortable at that particular time. I think the tentative plan was if we were to do one in person, it would occur here in Ketchikan, which would be very helpful because that would avoid at least moving all of our staff potentially on a single plane to another location. So I'll leave that up to the board, but I will just highlight that we should make a decision on that relatively early because we'll have to reserve housing and flights and meeting space and the like. I think if folks were comfortable traveling down here to Ketchikan, that we could reserve a meeting space and put enough tables in there so we could exercise appropriate distancing during the meeting.
Trey, going back to that, what do you think the drop dead date would be? We need to make a decision on that.
Sharon, you want to weigh in on that?
You know, Bob, I would say give me at least 30 days notice.
Okay, so we're looking November, early November?
Early November, yes, because the meeting would be December 10th. I'd say by November 1st would be great.
Okay, thank you. I'll go back. Do the other board members want to weigh in on this topic?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
I just have a quick question with regard to this. If at this time we indicated that that is something we wanted to do and the situation changes, what kind of impact would that have on staff to try to plan to actually make an in-person meeting happen and then make a change to use this format if there were change in policy or with our situation? What kind of impact would that be for staff? Would be my question.
Well, so if I may jump in at the through the chair,
please,
essentially we do what we normally do. Sharon would go ahead and initiate reaching out to the various venues, see what their availability is for our particular planned date for the next meeting, and reserve space book any required flights necessary. And then, you know, say if we got a notification by November 1st, then potentially we'd have to cancel those. And I don't know if there would be any cancellation charge. Potentially, there typically is some, but not hugely significant.
Thank you. Any other thoughts?
This is Steve in Wrangell, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. If we're going to do it, I just want to make sure that there's measures in place. For me personally, you know, my wife is one of three physicians in Wrangell. So if I drag it back into my house and my wife winds up having to go into quarantine or worse, into isolation for 2 weeks, that puts our community down to two docs instead of three. So there's, you know, I just want to make sure that if we do it, we're putting the appropriate mitigation in place.
Thank you, Steve.
Mr. Chair, it's Carl.
Go ahead, Carl.
I have a question for Trey and Sharon. If there was an in-person meeting in Ketchikan scheduled, would there be an opportunity for any board members that were not comfortable coming to Ketchikan to connect via Zoom? I'm perfectly happy with this platform myself. I've used it a tremendous amount in the last 6 months and got very familiar with it. And I think it's effective to see other people's faces and have conversations. In person is a whole nother level though. And you get to have sidebar conversations and get to know people better that way. But there still is a risk of in-person meetings. And like Steve said, mitigations are important, but if somebody is just not able or willing to come to Ketchikan for the meeting, is there a way to incorporate this platform as well?
So all through the chair, I would, with that in mind, I think as much time as you can give staff, if the board wants us to plan a potential meeting to figure out how we might set up additional monitors in the room, figure out all the comms that'll be involved in order to make that work. Of course, then if you're on the line, if we have a whole U-shaped big round table of people talking, I don't know if you'd be able to see each one talking. There would be some potential logistical challenges. It would probably be more like just calling in on the phone, I think. I just, you know, if we don't own our own meeting space, it's pretty hard for us to go set all that up in advance and make sure it's all working. And to make sure you've got, you know, the appropriate type of cameras that'll track who's speaking over a relatively large room, because everybody's going to be spaced out, right? So I think there's some challenges that go with that, definitely, to make the experience a positive one. I'll also mention, too, that given, I guess, my personal preference, given the opportunity to sit here and speak to folks on the phone and see their face as opposed to sitting in a room and wearing a mask for 8 hours, that's not real appealing to me. Just my 2 cents.
Yeah, thanks for that, Trey. I'm fully in favor of staying with Zoom for now. That's my 2 cents.
Okay, thank you, Carl. Other thoughts from the board?
Mr. Chair, this is Carl in Ketchikan. As much as I would love to host you folks down here, I guess I question us tempting fate. We're going to be heading into the regular cold and flu season very shortly anyway. You know, it seemed to me to make more sense maybe to put off that first meeting until after the first of the year, until we get a better handle on where we're going with the pandemic. So I'm content to keep the status quo.
Thank you, Carl. I guess anybody else? I guess what I'm hearing now is that folks would prefer to do a Zoom meeting for the December meeting, is what I'm kind of generally hearing right now.
Mr. Chairman?
This is Joel. Can I comment a little bit on this? Because I had a different client at a different utility down here. Rural utility, very few cases. He asked me, you know, what's the risk of holding these meetings? And from the legal side, and I just thought I'd share my thinking on that. I mean, when I think about this, I think the largest risk is to our employees. And if we somehow inadvertently spread some COVID to an employee and they get sick and all the things that could happen with that, you know, it sets up a possible circumstance of certain claims against the utility. And I guess I just think, you know, everything, we're all reading the same things. And my concern would be that things are going to look substantially different in December, but we won't know that for another month and a half. So I guess I'm just concerned from a more of a defensive liability circumstance that we all get together and somehow lead to some sort of outbreak out there. So.
Thank you, Joel.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Bob.
I don't know if it's appropriate, but at this time I would be happy to make a motion to have the Zoom meeting in December, or if that's not necessary, it could be the direction of the chair.
Okay.
Point of order, if I may, Mr. Chair. I mean, I'll just point out that we do have an item on the agenda regarding the next meeting, and maybe it'd be more appropriate to take that position then.
Sounds fine.
Thank you. I was headed the same place. Thank you, Trey. Okay, I'm going to, unless I have some other thoughts on this particular topic, let's move then to the one, I put one on there on capital planning and review process. At the last meeting, we got into a discussion related to the need for rate increases and so forth, and how that would be done and so forth. In the meantime, Trey sent to us all the last paper that was done on capital costs. And I thought that Jeremy did an outstanding job last time of talking about the situation and from the utility standpoint, what he really or they really needed to see. And with that, Jeremy, could I turn that back to you and let you kind of rephrase or to talk about that for a minute, please?
Sure. If it would, I appreciate that, Chair. I would, at this time, before I go into that, I would like to, if it's possible, defer to Carl first before I go into that, if Carl would like to speak to that first, if that's okay with you.
That's certainly okay with me.
Jeremy, I was not able to attend that meeting, and I really didn't get a chance to hear your comments, so I'm going to reserve judgment until I hear what you have to say.
Thank you, sir. So at the last meeting, we had a conversation, and my concern that I brought up was that if we're going to be seeing a potential rate increase coming, that's something we wanted to see well ahead of time so that our utilities would have an appropriate time to plan and move those forward to our ratepayers and give that proper information. One of the things I had indicated was that I would like to see basically staff put together their justification for what at rate they were looking to implement, and that those would be forecasted out into the future so that when we make a decision on a rate, we're making a decision that rate would be increased at some point in the future to give us time to plan accordingly within the utilities. But that we also wanted to see what those impacts were. One of the other questions that was brought up with regard to the rate was specifically for the bonding for the cable. And I had asked about looking back previously when the rate had come up before about where does that play a role and how is that going to impact us moving forward? So, you know, we wanted to be able to see specifically the rate justification, what the need for the rate increase was, how that would be applied, and that would be something that would happen in the future. So as an example, if we were talking about a rate increase today, we'd be saying that we would be approving a rate increase today for something in the future to give us plenty of time to accommodate our budgets and our planning processes within our own utilities. I believe that's the Cliff Note version of what I'd said. And that's kind of the same feeling that I have today. It hasn't changed, that we would want to see A, what the impacts or what those rate increases are, what the justification for those rate increases are, impacts to long-term budgets, and that those would then come on at a future time so that we have time to get ready for them. Does that recap what you recall, Chair?
Yes, it does, Jeremy. And the question on the table, you know, as Trey last time was, is that, yes, there's going to be a need for a rate increase. And we talked about a half a cent. And then a couple of the other board members said, is that going to be enough, or are we going to need to plan this out over time? And then I believe another board member too talked about, wait a minute, we need some time to plan for this. That's kind of what, in a nutshell, what I heard in that discussion. I will add one other thing. As I read the report that Trey sent out, it seems to me that, you know, and I thought they did a good job of outlining costs. I see some of the assumptions they made in that report, obviously, are wrong today. But there's a disconnect in there in my mind, is that they showed in that report you know, what it would cost to keep our facilities going, in a good